So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Grab a chair, come on over. It is our weekly marriage hour here on Trending, and you don't have to be married to join us. We're talking about dating detox because, you know, it takes a dating detox sometimes to get married. Sometimes suddenly you take the dating detox and boom, the one is right there. I'm not promising that that is what will happen if you do this 40-day detox, but it might. Joining me in just a little bit will be Lisa Cotter to share about the 40-day dating detox, how you can do it, heal from past relationships, confusion about people of the opposite sex, and really work on chastity in your life and prayer and growing in holiness. We're going to talk about men. What is a husband's mission? And did Prince Harry, within that context, do the right thing with protecting and providing for his spouse, Meghan Markle? We'll also dive into the topic of what is the mission of a wife? What are two things that she has primary to who she is and what she does as a wife? And there's one thing you could do every time you see your spouse that could significantly change the dynamic and the conversations when you see them, when you talk to them. So stay tuned. We'll be unpacking this and so much more today during the show. If you have a question, the number is 1-888-914-9149. So Prince Harry, Meghan Markle, if you wanted my two cents on the entire thing and my prediction about their future, go and listen to yesterday's episode, okay? Because I made a prediction. It's a big one. I think you might be interested in what it is. Let me know if you agree. If you totally think I'm wrong, I don't know, but British royalty has invaded the United States, and there's something we need to consider here. In addition to, of course, the tell-all and the article and the Oprah interview, yes. But here's what I want to talk about in relation to our marriage hour, because we talk about marriage every Thursday. And Prince Harry has stolen the hearts of so many young women for many years now. And I think there's something to say when now the world turns to him as he said two really important things about his role in this entire ordeal of leaving the royal family. For him, it was about two things: protecting his family, specifically his wife, and providing for them. You just hit the nail on the head in terms of what a man's mission and specifically a husband's mission is. But the question is, did he do this right? I don't know. Do you think he did? I'll share my thoughts here. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Many people in the church have talked about how protecting and providing are actually the God-given roles of a man, whether he's married or not. And this is especially so to be understood when you're married. This is a man's mission to protect, not just in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense as well, to protect and preserve the physical bodies of your family members, but also to protect and preserve them. That is, to protect and preserve the faith that they have so that it might continue to grow. That means protecting them, for example, from material threats, consumer threats, where they spend their eyeball power and ears in terms of music and various content. So as I'm looking at Prince Harry, two questions. Did he provide well and has he protected well? Essentially, he got his wife out of an unhealthy environment. I think that we can all agree it wasn't a healthy environment for Meghan Markle. Whether you agree with the extremeness of the claims they made surrounding racism, mental health, suicidality, and so forth, we have to understand on some level, I'm sure, a lot of this is true. I'm not saying that it's not, but I think the bottom line is that he saw that his wife had to get out of the situation. And I was talking to my mom about this yesterday. He had to have been terrified that what happened to his mom would happen to his wife. It was an incredibly traumatic thing for him. And so he did what he had to do. But here's what confuses me. And I mentioned this yesterday on the show. Prince Harry is well known for not liking to do anything with the media, not wanting the media to know anything about his life and so on. So why is he suddenly going public with a very private family matter, especially when he's concerned about his family's safety? I don't know. That's the thing that isn't quite fitting, but that ties into my prediction that I made yesterday. So go ahead and listen to that if you didn't catch it. And also, here's the other thing. So he was willing to take his family outside of an unhealthy environment, and he keeps talking about the problem of racism and so on, but then he's willing to expose his kid to further scrutiny by the things that he is sharing that his own family members have said, having to do with racism and the color of his skin. You know, that's where I'm confused. Protecting your family, and this is a lesson for all of us, has to do with what we do and don't say publicly. And it's not just publicly on social media, it's what we do and don't say in private conversations with other people. For example, what we do and don't say about our spouses, complaining about our spouses to others. One of my friends, I remember she told me that her mom, growing up, told her, you know, I really make sure that I don't talk about your father and any marital challenges that we have to other people, because I found the one time I did early on in our marriage, it was the one and only time. The one time that I did, people are quick to encourage a divorce and to villainize him and to dwell on the negativity and then to bring it up over and over again when maybe I just needed someone to listen for a moment. But even then she realized, one, it can damage their character and other people's eyes, but two, most people just don't have good advice, and it can cause, in our current culture, a lot more problems than it can help by me having someone to vent to. And so this is the confusing moment where suddenly this entire situation is made public. It's a reminder for us, protecting our spouses, protecting our families, especially from a man's perspective, especially has to do with the fact that we have to be careful what we talk about, what we share publicly. Second perspective that I have on this, did he provide well in this entire situation? And by the way, a big thing with regard to providing had to do with the fact that he wanted to have enough money to provide proper security for his family. And I'm not talking about financial security. I'm talking about boundary security, people packing in order to keep his family safe. Because they actually, this was one of the big things, the Crown ended up removing all security, not just, they refused to give Archie security, they refused at some point to give Meghan security, and they actually removed Prince Harry's security right when COVID hit. And so here he is, he's saying this is all about security and providing. But this is the one thing that confuses me. What does it mean to provide? I think that many men struggle. And call me if I'm wrong on this. Numbers 1-888-914-9149. I think many men struggle because they desire to provide and they do provide, but sometimes there's confusion about the way provisions are given and how much is necessary. I think Harry was kind of blindsided by this idea that he had to provide a certain type of lifestyle. And that's why he sold his soul to every type of streaming platform possible. And why he's sharing his story publicly. Because he wants a certain income level for his family. There's something he's used to. And so it's a reminder for us, sometimes we go over the top. We do things we don't want. We actually create a cost of living we don't desire and that doesn't necessarily allow for a conducive lifestyle that we want. Because we think we have to have a certain income threshold, a certain number of cars, a certain priced house, abundance of food. And sure, she married a prince, and he's probably thinking that, but what person hasn't gone through financial struggles in their marriage? The loss of children, the loss of circumstances, location, challenges with family. The only difference between them and us is that they have more money and they have a crown. Truly. And so it's again, this is where we can relate to this. We don't need to take everything so public. And so providing, I think the thing that stands out is having to do with providing. Sometimes we get worked up in our heads a certain type of lifestyle. And fathers, husbands, if you're listening right now, don't follow the ways of the world in terms of what you have to give your family, in terms of what an environment looks like. Now, I'm not saying to leave your family in rags or anything like that. But remember that your family needs you as a protector and a provider, both in a material, physical sense, as well as in a spiritual sense. And sometimes providing too much materially or providing a certain type of environment actually does more detriment for the soul than it does good. And that spiritual protection and that spiritual provision matters even more so than the material protection and the material provision. And remember that providing and protecting are your God-given roles as husband and father. You're listening to Trending with Tim Marie. I'm gathering responses for next week's Marriage Hour. I'd love to hear from you. As a Catholic, what did you do when your spouse didn't want to have children? What conversations did you have? Did they come around? I would love to hear you. You can go ahead and write me on social media. Head over to relevantradio.com/trending to send me a direct message. My guest today is Lisa Cotter, from the author of Dating Detox. And we're going to unpack how you can actually do a dating detox. It's not too late. We are in the middle of Lent. It doesn't have to be the beginning of Lent in order to do this. Lisa, share with us a little bit about just the mindset of the culture that has led to the necessity for so many people to pull back from dating.
Well, hello, Timory. So great to see you or chat with you, I suppose. So here we are in a culture where we actually talk about things like detoxing from dating. I mean, I don't think that was a conversation, I don't know, 50 years ago, right? We would never think to put those two words together. But we do live in a culture where dating is really different. It's really challenging. You know, I think in the past, the way that people dated, it was pretty simple. You know, somebody showed up at your house, asked you to take you out. Mom and dad were there to see you off in a perfect world, right? And really, it was just whoever was in your area. That's who was a person you could potentially date. And now the whole entire world is opened up to us. And so we get fatigued from the dating process. We get overwhelmed by it. We also are so much more, I don't know if flippant is the right word, but we're just more casual about our dating. And so there's a lot more scars that are brought into our dating relationships, are brought from our dating relationships. And so we find that we have to take a step back and really heal in ways that perhaps, I don't know, I didn't live in simpler times, but in ways that perhaps were not as necessary in the past. And so we're seeing this trend where people do, they need to take a break from dating and do something like a detox.
And Lisa, I love where you just said people are fatigued and they're overwhelmed because there are so many ways to date rather than, you know, maybe a family member or a friend introducing you to someone, setting you up on a blind date, or stumbling into someone when you're getting your groceries. There are so many means to dating and so many applications and conversations we're having. It's overwhelming. So share with us a little bit more about your book, The Dating Detox, this challenge. It's 40 days long. What are kind of the three main areas that you focus on during the detox?
Yeah, so it's set up as a detox, as a 40-day detox, I should say, because I found that, you know, oftentimes when people realize that they're fed up with the way the world dates, and to put it broadly, you know, they're fed up with the hookup culture, they're fed up with the way that they have been doing things. They know they want to change, but it feels like they have no idea how. And so I wanted to give a process, and that's really what this is it's a process book. It's hitting a reset button on what mindset do you enter into dating with? How do you deal with your past or your baggage? How do you deal with the doubts that you have about your ability to love and be loved and all of that? And so the book is broken down. I know you said three, but it's broken down into really 5 weeks. And we look at, you know, just some basic foundations of how are we created? Why does dating matter? And just kind of looking at, you know, what were we made for? How did God create us when it comes to dating relationships? And then we go into the physical passions, and then the next week into the emotional passions. So we look at the physical side of things. How does that affect our dating experience when we decide to write our own rules for what sexuality should look like and what is okay and what isn't okay in a dating relationship when it comes to the physical side. You know, how does that affect our relationship? And then same things with the emotions, the emotional passions, right? It's really important to recognize that there are emotional elements to a relationship that in our world today, we have kind of tried to either suppress and say, well, let's not get involved emotionally, right? Like, let's just have fun. We actually weren't made to do that. That actually doesn't work, even if we try to just say, oh, this is just fun, or we're just, you know, we're just going to keep things light and keep our, you know, not get too burdened by each other in terms of this relationship. It just doesn't quite work. So looking at how do the emotions factor into our dating relationships. And then towards the end of the book, just talking about very briefly over the course of a week or so, how do we approach dating now? Now that we have a new mindset, we have new lenses to look through for dating and relationships. Okay, what steps do we need to take so we can gain the freedom to love and be loved? And that's ultimately what the book is about, is I want people to have the freedom to not see dating as drudgery, but to be able to see it as a way to grow and to see it as a way to discover your vocation. That's a beautiful thing. It should be a fun and exciting process if it's done with the Lord as the center.
That's Lisa Cotter, the author of Dating Detox. It's a 40-day cleanse from dating to help you date better, essentially. Know what you want. But three themes I really love in your work have to do with working on the physical side of the relationship, chastity, the spiritual side, prayer, but then also the psychological side of healing from either past relationships or confusion having to do with brokenness with the opposite sex, whether dating or even kind of family of origin and things such as that. So share maybe one challenge for each of these that people are encouraged to walk through.
Yeah, so the book is set up, I'm glad you mentioned this, the book is set up as each day it gives you a challenge, a tangible thing you can do. In terms of chastity, I think one of the most important challenges that I give is for people to identify their triggers. And triggers are the things that set you up before you end up in a situation that you regret. So it's not what happens in that moment, but what happens the moment before is so important to understand. For some people, that might be getting dressed up and going out to a party and drinking. Okay, well, that's your first step before you end up falling into a situation you want to be in. So we need to back up and we need to not drink, to put it very simply, a very easy, obvious one. But there can be other things that might trigger someone. It could be loneliness. It could be calling that ex-boyfriend or girlfriend that you know will always be ready to meet with you or whatever it is, and really figuring out, okay, so what are those things that set me up for failure and how can I begin to reassess those situations and not get myself into the situation before the situation? So that's what I would say for chastity. For prayer, one thing I love to do, another challenge that we gave, you know, obviously prayer is important. It's the most important thing, but that's the obvious one. So what I would give something a little more out of the box would be to choose a patron saint for your relationships. Pick somebody, a saint who has meaning to you, who can be that person who you call on to be praying for you when it comes to discovering your vocation.
And there, we lost you for a moment.
Yes, I'm so sorry about that. I don't know quite what happened there. Patron saint of relationship, just finding that person who can be for you, that person as your go-to to be asking for their intercession throughout the process of your dating relationships. And then finally, for healing, was that right? Looking at healing?
Yes, the psychological side of healing from past relationships or even just kind of improper understanding from family of origin about the opposite sex.
Yes, that is such a great question. You know, one thing that comes to mind to me for that would be taking those moments where you felt like the Lord abandoned you or was not there in that moment, those places of woundedness and brokenness, and asking him and praying for him to reveal to you where he was. Because Jesus is always there, no matter the situation, even if it's a difficult situation, even if it wasn't his, you know, his best will, even if there was sin and evil working in that situation, God never truly abandons us. And so asking him, where were you in that situation? Where, reveal to me where you were in that moment so I don't fear that you're going to abandon me, or so I don't fear that you're going to orphan me or leave me alone ever.
Isn't that so profound of inviting our Lord into the broken moments to help us move forward in the new moments we will experience with those people of the opposite sex? And this is so important because there's so much confusion having to do with healing, having to do with intimacy and relationships, and also this great desire for prayer and to grow in our faith. But sometimes we don't know how to incorporate that into the discernment of the person we're dating. So there's your dose of the dating detox. You can find the book written by Lisa Cotter. We'll link to it in the show notes. But we're going to come back with Lisa Cotter to talk about what's next. Dating 101, how to date. Maybe you want your kid to go on a date. I'm talking about your adult kid. Here's some stuff to help.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Drew Mariani here at Relevant Radio announced his new book, Divine Mercy, that it will be released soon. In his new book, Drew shares the stories of people who have been transformed by God's healing mercy. And it will help you discover the healing power of divine mercy in your own life. And you can get this book absolutely free. No shipping, no handling, no strings attached. Get one of the first copies of Divine Mercy by Drew Mariani by going to relevantradio.com/mercy today. Supplies are limited, so reserve your free copy today. That's relevantradio.com/mercy. Dating 101. Okay, so maybe you really want to see your adult kid go on a date. Let's be real. There's a lot of social awkwardness today about dating. You know, I think it was Mark Ranieris said, he wrote this book called Cheap Sex, and he commented, I think it was in an interview, not necessarily in the book, that basically, and this is raw, young people today, the dating scene is just a couple pieces of meat rubbing up against each other. And I know that is raw, but when you think about it, unfortunately, people don't know how to date. They know how to hook up and that's it. And so I think talking about how to date is so important. And joining me today, we were just talking about the 40-day detox. My guest is the author of Dating Detox. Lisa Cotter is here. And I want to unpack a little bit more of kind of that how-to of dating to help people get back into it. First of all, what would you define, Lisa, as a date?
As a date? Oh, that's such a great question, because if you ask that question to a room full of young adults, you will get as many answers as there are young adults in the room. Nobody knows, right? It's really challenging. But for me, I would say going on a date with someone would be two people getting together with the intention of seeing if there's a possibility for a future together. And that sounds kind of heavy, but the whole point of dating is to discover whether or not you could spend the rest of your life with this person. And yeah, you might need to meet with them to discover whether or not you could see a potential with a future for them. But if there's no intentionality in getting together, and if it, then it's just friends. Now we're just friends getting together for coffee, and that's fine. But that needs to be clear in the date so that nobody leaves confused or asking questions or waiting for a text that never comes.
And with that, Lisa, the other side of it as well is a date doesn't mean it's a relationship. It doesn't mean I'm asking to be my spouse right away. It's not a proposal. And, you know, dating, just going on dates, doesn't have to be exclusive. And I think that that's where I really appreciate former generations where they talk about, yeah, I dated a bunch of people because I was testing the waters out, getting to know people. And some people say it was a free meal. Okay, I've heard that said before. but let's unpack maybe some of your top two tips, especially after you talk about this dating detox that we just walked through, for going on a date. Tips that people can give their friends, but also that we can practice ourselves.
Yeah, I would say the first thing is just don't be afraid to put yourself out there. And I know that can be very challenging in our culture today, because that could be a number of ways of putting yourself out there. One could be going to young adult events. Another could be signing up for an online dating app. But one thing that a friend of mine did recently that I just thought was brilliant, and he is now recently married, is he sent out an email to some close friends and said, listen, I really want to be intentional about discerning my vocation and finding someone to enter into marriage for life with. Do you know of anybody who you could recommend this. That I take out?
Yeah. Okay. So how did really it go? Cool. Did he have responses?
Yeah, he did, for sure. And my husband and I sat and we brainstormed and we thought, okay, Daniel, we know him. Like, what kind of things would Daniel be looking for in a girl? Like, he's kind of an intellectual guy, really loves music, you know, and really started to try to think through some people who we could set him up with. And again, like you said, this is the date where it's not pressure. He's not proposing to this girl. He's just saying, I'm looking for people who maybe God might, you know, be calling me to explore a future with. And we were not the ones who introduced him to his future spouse. But he was very intentional about it. He said, I don't want to turn this into something that's cold and calculated, but I also want to be thoughtful. I don't want to just wait for someone to fall into my lap. I don't want to just wait around. And he was in his 30s, his early 30s at that point, and had tried lots of different avenues. And when he went to his friends and family, that's when he finally had success.
You know, I'm so happy to share the story because that was exactly what I was going to tell people. And I've said this often on Trending. If you're interested in getting married and you want to date someone, tell people you want to have a family. Tell people you want to get married because then people will start looking for you. But this is the next step. Because I've said that before, but this is where someone says, I'm actually going to write an email to people I know who would be good individuals to introduce me. And look, it was a step in the right direction for him. And it's a reminder, we were talking about this week during the show of prayer, of asking for prayers, of asking for specific intentions and having them heard. And Lisa, this is a perfect example of ask and you shall receive. Be humble, be open, and take your vocation to our Lord. And allow him to use other people to bring you to that vocation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I can't emphasize enough just the importance of the communal aspect of dating. And I think we've really lost that. I think we've kind of tried to compartmentalize it. Like, well, that's that thing that I try to do on my own and I have to figure it out and it's hard and it's not fun. And really, I think in a perfect world, you know, this is something that just naturally flows from the life you're living in the community that you are already involved in. And I know that it's not always going to be possible for it to be that way. And there are some wonderful couples that have come out of dating apps. But I think your first resource, your first line should be those who already know you and the community that already surrounds you.
This is fabulous. Okay, so I have a question for you. Someone told me years ago, and I really like this statement, but I think it needs to be nuanced sometimes as well, because it can become a little prideful when we're dating. They told me, when you date next, always make sure that you date up. What do you think about that statement of dating someone better than the last person you dated?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would hope you would hope for that in all things in life, not just in dating, right? It's not like, well, my next job's going to be worse than the one I currently have. my next, you know, living arrangement's going to, you know, not be as good as this current one or whatever it is. You know, I think we always want to be thinking with that mindset in some senses. But I think, yeah, I agree with you on that for sure. But I also have sympathy for people who fear that there's no one to date up. And so they get nervous and then they choose to compromise. And I think that that's a worse situation to be in. I think this sounds so controversial perhaps, but might it be better to not be in a relationship than to be in a bad one? I think the answer is that you'd prefer to not be in a relationship than to be in a bad one.
I completely agree with that. And I think that's the hard thing. So many people, I would say, especially women, think that they always have to be in a relationship, and taking that detox, taking that time away, letting go of being in a relationship can actually allow you that opportunity to be a better catch yourself and to be open to someone who would be better than the people you've dated before. And that brings me to this whole idea of dating up, Lisa. I think so often when we say dating up, all of us have our own definition of that. Well, dating up in terms of looks, in terms of salary, I mean, in terms of how many children they want. I mean, what are we talking about when we say dating up? And one thing that really irks me in the Catholic world is when someone will say, I just could never even go on a date with him because he doesn't have a better prayer life than me. Those are cringeworthy words in my opinion. And I want to hear your reaction before I tell you what I think.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think it's hard because we don't always know what the Lord's doing. He could be, oh, gosh. Oh, Timory, that's a really tough one. I think, you know, I've seen situations where people will enter into a relationship and maybe one person is stronger or further along in the their relationship with the Lord than somebody else. But the question I look for is, but are they willing to grow? Are they willing to reach higher? Are they willing to want to reach that higher bar? And I think that's what you're looking for, honestly, is, yeah, maybe they're not there yet, but is there that potential? And yes, are they showing that they desire it?
Yeah, I think we have to look for two things in people. Not that they have a better prayer life than us, but that this is someone who seeks truth, therefore will seek after God and what is right, but also that they are someone who is humble so that they will develop and have the potential to develop a prayer life. Because if we go around expecting, and I've heard this so often in the Catholic dating world, if we go around expecting them to have a better prayer life than you, well, or as equal, that's living a life on the level of comparison. And like you said, not everyone's there. Everyone's in a different state. And so not to say, hey, you know, go ahead, date them, even if they don't have a great Catholic faith. That's different from judging a person's prayer life and also their potential, as you talked about.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I can think of so many friends who have stories of a relationship where they meet someone who's, you know, a little rough around the edges, but that person just wants to, they want to grow, but nobody's ever shown them. And so I think, maybe this is a tangent tip, but I think it's so important, you know, if it's a girl who's dating a guy who's wanting to grow, that the girl doesn't take that on. Is that's her little project, is to help him grow, but to find a group of men who can run with him and show him how to live this life as a Catholic man.
In other words, no missionary dating. And it's not just women who do this. We do it on both sides. No. We don't realize when we're doing it. So if you're dating right now, really ponder whether or not you're trying to fix them or whether you're trying to date them. That's such an important thing. You can't be the person you're dating savior. Then you will go into a marriage and that will be an absolute disaster. But let's talk about some practical how-tos of dating or getting that date, making it happen. I loved the dating project that came out a few years ago. And it gave so many tips for what people can do to make that date happen. And the first thing is finding your dating pool of, if you're remotely interested in someone, shoot for it. Go ahead and ask them on a date. And I have a lot more traditional side of me. If I'm a lady, I would prefer to be asked out by a man. But one of the arguments of the dating project is, you can ask. It's as simple as asking to go to coffee. You're not asking for a relationship, because unfortunately, a lot of men just don't step forward. For me, that would be a turnoff, but I know for others, they're willing to go ahead and ask. So that's number one. But number two, the argument is in the dating project, if you ask, you pay. And you keep it simple as a coffee. It should be something not really longer than an hour, you know, not going on late night walks alone. It's somewhere public where you can get to know a person to see if this is someone you're actually interested in dating.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of with you. I'm a little old school. I like the idea of the guy having to put their neck out there first and be vulnerable and kind of put themselves on the line for the ladies. But I don't know. Maybe there's a tactful way that that could be done that, you know, maybe for those who are a little more traditional wouldn't feel as like they were like trying to drag the relationship along by starting it.
So here's my number. Call me maybe. I don't know.
That's right. Maybe that's, yeah. You know, what comes to mind when you were talking about that, though, is I have a friend who is single and had been here in Denver for about a year and a half and was getting ready to move. And she called me and she said, "Lisa, I announced that I was moving in 2 weeks and I had four guys ask me out on a date."
No way.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And so I guess my tip when I'm thinking about this getting back is like, don't wait. Like if you
don't wait. Yeah.
Yeah. I think these guys were just like kind of kicking the can thinking like, oh, I don't know. She might not go for it. And then it was like, well, it's now or never.
Okay. Gentlemen, hold on. Hold on. Stop moving those fingers. Do not text her and ask her. Either call her or ask her in person if you have the opportunity. Stop the texting fingers or the FaceTime, Facebook or Instagram. Do it in person or do it over the phone if you don't have access to that. So that brings to a couple more tips I'd love to hear your thoughts on. We mentioned, you know, don't go for late night walks. You know, make it simple, 1 hour in and out. But the one that made me laugh from the Dating Project, I did not know what this was until I heard of the Dating Project. A-frame hugs of literally having the lean forward, shoulders forward, chest back, butt out when you give a hug, if you give a hug on a date. To continue to allow for that space or kind of the sideways A-frame hug, kind of the sideways side pat. I think this is so funny, but I think that it's hilarious that we actually have to say this because people go too far too soon and they find themselves in situations that they had no intention of revving the engine so soon in terms of just a basic physical contact early on.
Yeah. And that's why I think understanding your emotions is so important because it's exciting. You're on a date and we tend to project this vision of this person where we exaggerate their good qualities just because we want them to be that. And so we'll take these qualities about them and just all of a sudden be like, oh, they were nice to that elderly lady crossing the street. Therefore, they are a saint. You know, we project this. And so it's so important to not allow our emotions to run wild because then where our hearts go, our bodies want to follow. And so right from the beginning, we have to recognize that we need to pay attention to our heart. Not that it's bad that we feel emotions. Of course, it's going to be a part of the relationship, but we have to keep them in check and recognize what's really going on here and see the reality of the situation before we find ourselves being blinded by our emotions.
That's Lisa Cotter, the author of the book Dating Detox. We'll post a link to it in the notes on the podcast at relevantradio.com/trending. Thanks for joining us, Lisa. I look forward to future conversations having to do with dating. In the meantime, we have a phone call, Bill from Helena, Montana, and he has a comment on what we were discussing earlier about how men are called. They have the God-given role as fathers, as husbands, to protect and provide. And I mentioned earlier how protecting and providing first and foremost has to do with this in the spiritual sense. In the material sense comes second. And so, Bill, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You had a comment on the spiritual leadership. Please share.
Hi, Timmy. Thank you. Yes, coming from a situation right now where I'm my wife and I are separated, kind of looking back over our years together and this idea of provide and protect. I think it's just so crucial that men cultivate that faith relationship, that relationship with God, and then bring that into their homes. That role of leadership, I think, from my experience, I didn't take it as seriously as I should have. And, you know, if you cultivate that relationship with God first, and bring it into the home, mentor it, lead with it. I think it's just so important. You know, men have to know that, and I think that's part and parcel to being a man, is cultivating that relationship with God, and then as provider and protector, those things will fall into place. And that's where I'm at now. I'm learning that lesson a little later in life. I've returned to Catholicism in the midst of this separation. And I'm learning lessons that from a Protestant view before, I was in Protestant non-denominational churches, was never really addressed with specificity. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm learning and I'm reading and I'm involved with good men in the church, I'm beginning to see exactly what that looks like.
Praise God, you came back to your Catholic faith. Welcome home. I'm really sorry to hear about what happened, Bill, with your wife, and you will be in my prayers. And just a thought, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that, you know, the fact, and you said this in your comment before you came on air, that you focused too much on the material side of protecting and providing, and you let the spiritual side go, as you just mentioned, of that spiritual leadership. You know, it's worth, you know, turning to God in prayer and turning to your spouse who you've separated from to talk to her about the fact that this is a big part of what was let go and you're changing. I think it's so important to have these conversations. I love the book, Impossible Marriage is Redeemed. It's a book written by Layla Miller, and she talks about these stories one after another of couples whose marriages were on the brink of divorce, just like yours. And people just like you who have returned to their Catholic faith, who suddenly see where they went wrong with perhaps not leading spiritually, focusing on the material side. Things can change. Prayer changes things. And so, Bill, I really want to thank you for sharing with us. We are going to pray with you. You have an army of prayer warriors with you right now. And I'm just going to invite Our Lady of Peace and Our Lady of Hope to pray for you and your situation. And know that you have so many people praying for you right now, and that nothing is impossible with God. Thank you for sharing with us, Bill. I'll be right back here on Trending to share with you one thing you can do during our marriage hour. We're sharing this. When you see your spouse, it will completely change the dynamic for the better. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe. It's hard to look right at your baby. I picked up a friend of mine at the airport once, and he started singing this song to me, and he had me cracking up. He was a priest, and he's like, I just really love that tune. It's a great tune, because ladies, if you don't feel like asking someone out, that is one very forward way you could not ask them out and give them the opportunity. And please, gentlemen, do not wait until she's moving out of the city or out of the state. By the way, really funny side note. So I think maybe right before COVID, I received a Facebook message of this guy who I didn't know like super well, just from the young adult community, ended up asking me out on Facebook. Sorry if you're listening and just, you know, ask for my number first, maybe. I don't know. I didn't know him, so how was he going to get my number? Kind of just an acquaintance. But I felt really bad because my response was, you can guess, I'm sorry, but I'm married. Ooh, maybe you should look at the Facebook profile before you go through. And I think I had a photo of my husband like in my Facebook top part. So, I mean, you could clearly see. So, I don't know. Maybe he sent out a mass message to all the women on his list. That's not what we're saying to do, just so you know. I'm talking about the mass message. If you're listening, I'm sorry. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just laughing at the fact that I was married. Anyways, moving on. Brief, really exciting news. Mississippi, the first state in our great nation to protect girls' sports that are under attack. This current president, President Biden, issued an executive order that repeated the Obama policy, placing girls and boys in the same bathrooms and sports, letting little boys go into girls' bathrooms and letting boys and men play in female sports. Well, here's the deal. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves just signed Mississippi State Bill 20, or sorry, Senate Bill 2536 into law, making it the new law that bans biological males from participating in females and girls' sports. This is great. Why? Because it tells the truth. We are different men and women. if you are married, you really, really do know and understand this. This is why I can't understand why married people would support anything such as this. You know we are different. Come on. And there are moments where we do need to say, come on, over this transgender craze. Help people who are struggling, but say, come on, when we start trying to implement policies that push forward confusion about what it means to be man and what it means to be woman. This is a good law. It protects women. It protects their opportunities in sports. It protects their bodies from injury, because when you put boys with higher amounts of testosterone, with greater capabilities physically in a sports game against girls, whether they're little girls or adult women, they have more power. And guess what happens? These men competing as pretending to be women, they hurt the girls. They cause greater injuries. It's not safe. And it's taking away opportunities from women. And if we are pro-woman, we would not be supporting any sort of policy that takes opportunities in sports, women's sports, again, away from women. So let's tell the truth about this. And hey, maybe your state's next. What can you do to help get behind policies or implement new policies and get laws written and voted and enacted that will protect girls' sports? Because this is a big deal, and it was a battle we will continue to see over the next few years. We have 20 other states who are considering similar laws, so find out if that's your state and do what you can to help. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri now during our marriage hour, and I want to talk briefly about a woman's mission. We talked about a man's mission to protect and provide earlier, and I'm going to share with you in just a little bit one thing you can do to help your marriage just by walking in the room. That one thing will completely change the dynamic. But first, let's talk about a woman's mission. Two things that are so important for women are to nourish and to develop. To nourish those people entrusted to her, and to nourish herself as well, and to develop those around her in herself. St. Edith Stein said on the topic of nourishment, a woman's soul is fashioned as a shelter in which other souls may unfold. We need to nourish the good things in people, give them what they need on a spiritual level so that their souls can unfold and grow, their faith can blossom, so that their bodies can develop with proper nutrition and food. When I talk about food, I'm talking about both physical food, but also food for the soul. And nourishment has to do, yes, in a sense, with growing and developing as well, but nourishment really has to do with letting someone be who they are and allowing that to take place. But the second thing that I said, so women's mission, specifically a wife's mission, is to nourish, and then two, to develop. To develop herself and to develop those entrusted to her. St. Edith Stein, also known as St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, said, woman craves for an unhampered development of her personality just as much as she does to help another toward that same goal. You see, we get it wrong today in our culture with regard to development. We as women so often today think that we have to develop the world rather than focusing on developing ourselves and those whom we are responsible for. This overemphasis on philanthropic work and making changes and fighting injustices is great. And even loving your pet fur babies is great. But it's even more important for us to nourish the people in our lives and to develop and help them grow. I'll share more with you on this topic as the days unfold. We might even come back to it tomorrow, but I want to share with you that one thing that can change the dynamic of your marriage, your conversations, just by walking to the room. When you see your spouse, say they just walked into the room, I don't know, maybe they were in the bathroom, maybe they were at work, maybe they were at the grocery store. Do you smile at them when they walk in? Look at them and make eye contact and smile. This one thing can completely change the conversations, disarm incontinuity, disagreements that occur. Smiling with eye contact can help the other person know that you love them, you appreciate them, and that you're happy they're there. And it will help with whatever comes next in the conversation or the time together. So So do this every time you see your spouse.